I would probably start a AI university, an AI immersive university, because right now all of our schools are physical locations that are constrained by the limitations of physics. That, you know, last week I went and judged a hackathon at the MIT labs, and there was, you know, 500 students from around the world that actually came to do this VR hackathon. And it was amazing to see the energy there. But then, you know, 3 days later, they all went home, you know, so because these classrooms are full. Now, if we can make it, instead of going to a place, we go into a virtual experience, and anybody can go into any of, you know, any classroom can be anywhere and be full fidelity. Mm. I think that changes the equation of what the education industry looks like.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hey, Brad.
Hi, Tiffany.
For our listening audience, this is part two of a two-part series. So if you haven't caught part one with Alvin Wang Graylin, please return to last week's episodes and tune in. Otherwise, we're going to keep the conversation going. It's so great to have you back, Alvin.
Nice to be back.
All right, here we go.
Tiffany would never volunteer this, but she is at least four standard deviations above. So,
and it's on my LinkedIn profile.
You can probably tell that from our conversation or questions. Brilliant.
Well, now I feel underqualified to be on this podcast. So maybe I should be interviewing Tiffany.
Oh, I'll dumb it down for us, for you and I. Okay. So there's documentation emerging about how AI and immersive media help students learn more effectively. And that's great. But how do we prepare our students for their futures, where they're going to be more than consumers?
Yeah, so I think that there's actually a bigger, longer problem here, is that our current pedagogy is really, a lot of it is focused on STEM. And it's saying, hey, the way to success is STEM. And you got to be good at math, and you're good at science, and all that. And the reality is that STEM is becoming commoditized. When you can have AI be able to figure out any formula, be able to create any kind of charts and graphs and analyze tons of data and program whatever you want, the things that we used to value is going to be less important. And the things that maybe have been discounted will become increasingly important, in the sense of the softer skills, the ability to lead, the ability to communicate, ability to create and imagine and create art, things that people used to feel like, oh, that's what you do if you can't do the hard sciences or be a lawyer or a doctor. Right. Because in the future, most of the skills that we value today will be replaced either by a digital intelligence or a embodied digital intelligence. And at that point, what will probably matter is who can be the leaders that help create harmony, who can help tell stories in a way that gets people to cooperate with each other so that we stop having wars, who is going to be able to entertain each other in a way that allows us to have insightful education instead of just mundane wasting time type of 5 second TikToks. So I think that's going to change our value system. And I don't know if that's going to happen very quickly, but the world's going to change probably faster than our education system will adapt to it.
So can you envision a future where someone might sit down at a computer and say, we need a cure for X, or create this for me, and it's done?
Pretty much, yeah. A lot of that is already happening. I don't know if you've heard, but let's say, I think a couple of weeks ago or maybe a month ago, there is a tool that OpenAI created, or not OpenAI, actually Google created, that allowed them to essentially create new forms of protein, right, and new forms of it's some kind of new structures in terms of how atomic atoms are connected. And those type of things, they said they just couldn't have imagined before. But within days, they were able to provide thousands of new structures that wasn't possible before. Right? And when that is now applied to just more, maybe more basic structures, very soon, I think it'll be applied to medicine. it'll be applied to genetic engineering. So we can say, hey, why don't we just tweak this gene, this mRNA thing, and now we're actually immune to this disease. Instead of finding a cure, we just actually prevent it from ever happening.
Wow.
And I don't think we're that far away. So we're going to, and it'll be in our lifetime, that I think these type of things are going to happen. And in terms of just creating digital content, it's already happening. Before, it was making poems, and then it was making pictures. Now it's making videos. Pretty much in the next 6 months, we're going to be able to create 3D worlds, or at least 3D scenes. People are already creating 3D objects. I can say, hey, I want a car that looks like this with this color. And then boom, in a few seconds, you have a 3D model that you can turn around. Or if I just give it two pictures or something, they can create the back and create a 3D version of that picture. All of that's already happening today. And to do it by a prompt is going to be pretty mundane.
So do you think hundreds of years ago, there were people sitting in Germany, for example, having these conversations like, hey, you know what? I'm thinking about making this machine and it's going to print stuff. And people were saying, oh, that'll never happen. That's ridiculous. Is the discrepancy much greater now than it was then, do you think?
Yeah, I think that there's a big difference, right? Before, it was essentially we wrote it and the machine duplicated it. It just made multiple versions of the exact same thing. Now, essentially, it's able to write its own book, right? You have now context windows that are hundreds of thousands of words, which is essentially a full-size book. So in fact, for my book, I fed in my book to ChatGPT or to GPT's backend system. They're called AI Builder. And I made a custom GPT with my book. And now you can go in and ask questions and it will answer it based on only the content in my book.
Wow.
And now, so if we ever do this again, instead of talking to me, you should just go and type into that GPT and say, hey, what did Alvin think about this issue? And it will probably give you an answer that is as good, maybe even more eloquently than I can do myself. And I've actually tested it and I would say probably 80, 90% right. And in some cases, it's actually better because it brings in topics from all over the book to answer a particular question. I think it's definitely, we're definitely progressing and it's not the same type of progress, right? Before it was really just productivity increase. Now it's actually creation. It's creating new content.
With your permission, we just need to also use a website like Hey Jen and have an avatar that looked like you and have a bit of your voice recorded. And then instead of saying, this is what the GPT said, we'd say, this is what Alvin said, at least avatar Alvin had to say.
Absolutely. If you look at what's happening today, last week, as we talked before the show, Apple announced or released their new product, the Vision Pro. And as part of that Vision Pro, there's something called their persona. Essentially, it's a scanned version of yourself that is completely digital rendered. Now, if we add an 11 Labs voice to that digital rendered avatar, and then we link the back end to a custom GPT, then essentially, I can send my Alvin agent to you and do this presentation or do this podcast with you, and you wouldn't know. You would just think, oh, Alvin's wearing his headset to join this podcast.
I would ask that avatar, what did you have for breakfast today?
Yes.
Well, see, if it was a smart avatar, it would have actually read all of the things I've ever written. It would have watched all of my prior podcasts and interviews, and it would know. It would actually probably give a proper answer. So I might have watched episode one of what we just talked about, and then for episode two, it's all set.
There. It's incredible.
I don't know if you've seen, but there's now these little devices that you can get that will record all of your sounds. But essentially, you hang this little pendant on your neck and it records all the voices that you hear and all the voices that you say, and is able to then differentiate who's whom and has a record of it. So I can go back and say, hey, I had an argument with so-and-so. What did he really say? And it would come back and give me and say, he actually didn't say this. He said that. And I'd be like, ah, see, I told you. And I would be able to win these arguments. But you think about it. Once I have this type of a record, it can actually understand my responses to every question I've ever been asked, right? And if I actually have, let's say I have these little glasses here that has tiny little camera lenses. If I wear this and when I go outside, this is actually what I wear all day, I could actually be recording what I'm seeing.
Yeah, now that you've freaked out a few of our listeners, I'm sure, with realistic, though, illustrations of what the future will look like. It's a message we need to hear.
Of all the guests we've had, I think your vision and description of the future is one of the most precise that I've ever heard.
And thought-provoking. Okay, Alvin, you've given us a lot to think about already, but we're going to push you a little bit further. If you were given a magic wand, it's the Digital to Learn magic wand, and you could change anything about current AI or XR landscape, what would it be?
I think for your audience, I probably would focus more on education. In fact, I was talking to a friend last week, and they were saying, if you're going to start a company, what would you do given the current understanding of where technology is going? And I said, I would probably start a AI university, an AI immersive university, because right now all of our schools are physical locations that are constrained by the limitations of physics. That, you know, I went and judged a hackathon at the MIT labs, and there was, you know, 500 students from around the world that actually came to do this VR hackathon. And it was amazing to see the energy there. But then, you know, 3 days later, they all went home, you know, so because these classrooms are full. Now, if we can make it, instead of going to a place, we go into a virtual experience that anybody can go into any, you know, any classroom can be anywhere and be full fidelity. Mm. I think that changes the equation of what the education industry looks like. And the other thing is, you know, we've been very focused on grades. We really need to start thinking about how do we focus on motivating people, getting kids excited about what they're doing, and making it an experience versus being a fixed classroom changes that equation. It makes people, you know, this is why field trips are always the funnest part of the year, because you get to go do something. Now you get to go do something fun and go somewhere every single class, every single day. The other thing is we right now have a very fixed curriculum. And that, you know, essentially a teacher makes the curriculum or administrator makes it for a whole year, and you just go by that, no matter how quick or fast that student's learning. If we can go to a personalized curriculum where, you know, that AI is helping you in an immersive space, learning at your pace, it's going to allow everybody to not go at the lowest common denominator, but to go at the pace that maximizes learning. We also right now are very focused on a problem set model. It's like, solve this problem, we'll grade it, you know, you get it right or wrong. And we need to move to more project and experience models where, you know, you work as a group, go do something, go achieve something, because that's how the real world works, right? Nobody gives you a fixed problem with a fixed answer in the real world. And when you do experiences in 3D and you have a group and experience, group environment for doing that, it automatically becomes a project, right? To get away from doing the homework model, and, you know, here's a problem set, and then just create, say, here's a problem idea. How would you think about solving this? And allow them to come up with creative answers, right? So moving away from tests and really thinking, how do we build critical thinking? How do we create first order ideas and thinking on it, right? And right now, a lot of it is on individual results. You know, I think this is kind of, you know, I went to MIT, and one of the things that we really prided ourselves on was that most of the projects were group projects because we value collaboration. Whereas across the river from us, Harvard was all about individual scores. So, you know, they came up with, you know, the guys that they graduate wants to be a CEO. The guys that we graduate wants to go, you know, change the world. So it's a little bit different mentality. I'm not saying, you know, the world doesn't need CEOs, but not everybody can be a CEO, right? So the ability to want to help each other to succeed together is very different than a culture where I want to be first in the class and, you know, the bottom 10 gets cut, right? That was the Harvard policy. So the other thing is right now, it's really dependent on the teacher's experience and qualification understanding of how information is being transferred from the educator to the student. Whereas we need to, and not every teacher has all that knowledge, and not every teacher has the patience or the personality to work with kids. And, you know, I've had a few good in my life, I've been very lucky about it. And I think all of us had probably been influenced by one or two or three teachers that really changed our path, right? Now, if this AI teacher can collaborate with a human educator to have the educator provide the more softer support side, and the AI become essentially an all-knowing brain that supplements this educator, we really can I guess, equalize the education system around the world. Because as I said earlier, that one of the rarest commodities or resources out there today is a good teacher that knows what they're doing, knows how to teach, you know, has the patience, will guide, you know, students individually. And now we can actually have that and have the AI help every teacher do that. So that's kind of in terms of where I think education could change and really helping students learn how to learn, helping students get excited by innate learning versus just get excited by, I got a, you know, A score or 100% or whatever. You know, the, and what about the other people who didn't get 100%? They just get depressed. They're like, oh, I can't even get a B. You know, I should just give up. You know, and a lot of kids, like right now in China, a lot of kids are giving up. They call it a lying flat because they feel like no matter what grade I get, I can't beat the top kids. You know, I can't get a job. I have no hope. I can't buy a house because, you know, things just cost, you know, 20 years of salary for me to buy a house. They have very little hope. And so they lose the drive for life. And I feel like, you know, that's going to be an increasing issue as young people come into a world where inflation is getting higher and higher. And, you know, unless you have, and you're in the tech industry and get a high salary, you may not be able to afford to go and get a home anymore. You know, if you live in San Francisco and you're not in tech, you probably are not going to buy a home, you know, and that's for a lot of people is quite depressing. I feel like it's more a culture issue than it is a people issue. Right? Because when a culture prioritizes and incentivizes competition, you lose wanting to help each other, which I think is actually innate in most of us.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Thank you so much, Alvin. I mean, I feel like after this, going all the way back to the beginning when you were talking about kind of a love for physical activity, I think this would be like the prime time for Brad and for myself to like take a walk or something just to think about and process everything that you've shared and what it means for higher ed, what it means for us individually, for our families. So thank you for joining us and imparting your wisdom here.
Oh, no. Thanks for inviting me.
To our listening audience, we will have links to Alvin's LinkedIn page and to the resources that have been named today, including the book, in our show notes on Podbean or on the platform for podcasts of your choice. You can also check out Digital to Learn on LinkedIn for additional show notes and quotes from today. Picture of Alvin, links to his page. So be sure to stay tuned there and join us next week for a new topic and a new guest. We'll see you then.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Embrace the future.
Always keep learning.